Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. A big thank you to Al Strachan for joining us in that last segment.
Just great interview.
Terrific insight into that. Time to give away some tickets to Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club. They have been kind enough to give us some tickets. Call 780-1290 right now. That's 780-1290. First caller through wins tickets to Tuesday night's performance at Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club. 780-1290. Talk to Remus. You'll get your chance to win some tickets to Tuesday night's show at Rumors Comedy Club.
Al made a lot of good points in that interview. But one of the one that I really want to focus on for a second here is the sticks. I thought it was a great point about how the puck pops off the stick, taking away the time to shoot. That's a really interesting insight there from him and Al MacInnis. I would, and I've said this on the show before, for years now, they should be winning sticks.
Well, why don't you
and also the broken feet, as he mentioned.
Why don't you think the NHL mandates
money.
The equipment? Like
money.
Well, why is it money, though?
Because these composite sticks are more expensive, and they're getting corporate dollars, sponsors and such. What do you think?
Well, but I mean, every other league mandates the equipment that can be worn.
Maybe they have more money than the other leagues. The other leagues have more money than them.
Well, in golf, there's always been years worth of controversy. If you ever read back in the last, say, 25 years, as golf equipment has modernized,
there's
issues about the grooves in the wedges, and they outlawed certain types of irons at some points in time.
Is this the Golf Channel?
Well, no, it's apropos to the conversation.
Drew grew up with Lee Trevino. They went to school, grade school together, but.
We need a drum roll there, like the boom boom.
No, but in all honesty, I think what we can analogize this with.
Drew's not laughing.
No, I'm not.
I think it's analogous, guys, to baseball. Baseball wooden bats.
Sure. And baseball with those. What are those new bats they use in baseball? Are they maple or something?
Yeah,
titanium.
Maple,
but
titanium.
They moved away from the maple bats, though, Drew.
Because those were shredding out, shattering, and like shards were ending up in players.
You know, Drew, on this topic, though, okay, it might be the case that composite sticks give you a harder shot. It might be, but I think it's undeniable that it's a misconception that a composite stick is generally a better stick. Yeah. And we're not just talking about the shot. We're talking about the feel of the stick, passing, the way you hold it. And the thing is, anybody who's been to an NHL game in the last 6 years has seen a broken stick in a game. And oftentimes you'll see 4, 5, 6, 7 broken sticks. I think Dustin Byfuglien's broken a stick 15 times in one game this year. It's absolutely ridiculous. And it's the flex of the stick. The flex of the stick is completely different, Richie.
And that's the NHL level. And then you talk about what we talked about before. And I was saying to Al, hockey is so expensive. And people like us, we don't have kids, so we don't know that. We think about when we played, and the sticks are $20, $30.
It costs $1,000 a year to play hockey minimum, sometimes more than that.
If I play now, if I've been in rec league, I'm not buying expensive sticks. I'm playing in rec league. But when you coach and every kid has a $200 stick to have, but the peer pressure pushes these people to pay and the parents to pay a lot of money, never mind the ice costs, never mind the kids growing and changing equipment every day, a couple of times a year. I think it should be something that the league should look into
Shouldn't the league set an... I mean, we've spoken about this, like you said. We've spoken about this before. The league should set an example. And I know that, there's a world of difference between professional and, the youth sports and everything else. But the league should...
set an example for the
youth.
There's
no reason why the NHL can't come out and say, yes, we use composite sticks or whatever. But, that's for us. We're professionals. When you're starting out, when you're a rookie player, when you're, just learning the game, you don't need this stick. This isn't the stick for you. This isn't the best stick for you.
Also, does it have a role in goal scoring? I mean, goal scoring has been down every year since the lockout.
Yep.
I think we're at 5. What's a I think
5.2 goals a game now, I think.
Eric DeHatch wrote
that's
that, right?
That's pre-lockout.
Eric DeHatch wrote that.
Well, the over-under on every NHL game is five goals.
It's five.
Yeah. Richie, I think Drew makes a good point. You look at Hockey Canada, okay? You look at Hockey Canada and you look at the CHL. So we're talking the Ontario Hockey League, the QMJHL. This was in the news this week. And they're looking to the NHL for guidance on fighting in hockey. They've already said that they want to get fighting out of hockey. That means that they want to get fighting out of the best junior leagues in Canada. And so they look to the NHL for an example, and I think you're right. I mean, how many years was Don Cherry saying this? And I still think Don Cherry hasn't lost touch with the game, and I think he is a voice of hockey. He's been saying for years that equipment is causing these injuries. And you look at yesterday, Zach Parise got a hat trick. I don't know if you guys watched that game, but Zach Parise yesterday took a bit of an elbow from Brooks Like, and really. If he doesn't have a hard elbow cap, maybe he doesn't get hurt as much there. But that you have to set an example at the NHL level. As far as I'm concerned, just because NHL players are using these composite sticks and have 100-mile-per-hour slap shots doesn't mean a little 10-year-old kid who's just learning how to play hockey needs to go out and spend $150 on a composite stick.
I know,
the science, the science just isn't there. Like, people look at hockey equipment and they want...
If you're breaking your stick, receiving a pass...
That's the thing.
There's something fundamentally wrong with using that stick.
The sticks are too light and they have too much flex, let's be honest.
Are we doing a short one here?
Yeah, well, we'll get out in a minute or two. I mean, you still got another minute.
The one thing also is... I mean, a professor said this to me years ago, and the answer to me, it's
Professor Ginsburg or a different professor?
Not Professor Ginsburg, okay, fortunately. But and it's always wrong true. If you don't know the answer is money.
The sticks have gotten out of control. I didn't like them when they came out, and you know what? Fine, if people want to use them, and you ask if you went to a hockey rink and there's tons of them in Winnipeg, and you ask these kids, they want to use the composite sticks because their friends are, and the NHLers are, and the junior players
are. You coach with them, you know how it is, and these kids all have composite sticks.
Oh, and then none of our kids can hit the net, unfortunately.
Well, it's a real fundamental problem. How do you teach fundamentals if the tool that they're using is not conducive to learning those fundamentals?
I believe in Russia, Drew. I think they have a rule that you can't use anything but a wooden stick until you're 14. I read that, at least in some Russian leagues, youth Russian leagues.
I'd like to see some science guys that shows that a composite stick, scientifically, okay, is better for hockey. And to me, it has more to do with the lightness. Everybody used to say, oh, but I want to use a composite stick. Because remember, this was a gradual thing. Now everybody uses composite sticks. Yeah. Almost everybody. I mean, there might be people in rec leagues and some players in junior leagues that use them. But it's widespread now. And I don't think that wooden sticks could have gotten lighter. And as far as I'm concerned, a composite stick could easily be improved so that it's not breaking every single time you take a slap shot. It's gotten a little bit out of hand. It's been like that for a while.
It's a real problem, and I mean, another issue. The NHL just doesn't seem to ever acknowledge their responsibility to youth hockey and minor hockey, I find.
It's just the cost of exorbitant. To play hockey these days, to add that much cost, especially, by the way, we talk about how much is to buy a stick. Well, these sticks break. You know, some of them have a warranty, but they break. And you're buying that much, you're putting that much towards a stick each year. And the kid grows, and you cut it down to a certain chin level, and then he grows 2 inches, and then it's too short. He's got to buy another stick.
It's a problem.
You want to compete against soccer? You know, that's very low.
Well, there's a reason why soccer is the world's most popular game.
Even in Canada, it's growing like crazy.
Well, what does it take to play soccer equipment wise? First of all, it's a field. There's ample field, so there's no capital costs.
And guys,
and it's a pair of cleats.
No, you're right, Drew. And right. I think the thing is, we're not that old. I mean,
For yourself, Ezra.
And we all played soccer, though.
But as far as hockey goes, there used to be some selection. You know, Sherwood, Louisville, Easton, the aluminum sticks came in. But now you go to a hockey store, and there's 700 different types of sticks. I mean, really, a stick is not really that important. You know, you have a little variation in the curve.
$260, $270 these sticks.
Right, but it's ridiculous. The most important thing is skates. That's the most important thing as far as hockey equipment goes. I mean, sure, you maybe want a little bit of a curve, or you want a heavier stick or lighter stick. If you're a defenseman, you might want a heavier stick. As far as I'm concerned, it's not really that important to have a $300 stick, because it might give you a little bit, it's a little bit false. Most of these sticks aren't going to give you that much hard of a shot. It's like a golf club.
Especially if you're 12 years old.
You get the $700 driver, and they promise your ball's going to go 50 yards further. Most of the time, it's not. It's the mechanics of your swing.
It's the person operating the device. And at no point in time should your stick ever be more expensive than your skates.
Or your car.
It's also a good point. That's a good point.
Let's leave it there. We'll come back. We have much more ahead. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Big congratulations to Ryan. He won the Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club tickets for Tuesday.
Attaboy, Ryan.
More giveaways on those Rumors tickets to come. Much more still to come. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290.
Drew doing a little Pinterest during the break. Into Pinterest.
No, I'm not. I called it something completely different when we were out for breakfast this morning. What did I call it?
Pinstagram.
I called it
Pinstagram.
Pinster or something?
You called it extra hash browns.
Oh, is that what I called it? Yeah. I knew it was something close.
You got to be careful with those hash browns. You had some food poisoning. You missed a Jets game. You got to be careful with your starches. I'm worried about your starch intake.
Really? I'm worried about your cigarette intake. That's what I'm worried about.
Yeah, I'm worried about that too.
You're trying to quit.
No, you're not. You went out and bought cigarettes before the show this morning.
But I asked why your window was down when you were driving. I realized you're smoking. It's my
ass. No, but I also bought a cessation device. I just like saying cessation.
What is that? Okay. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. Our website is www.illegalcurve.com. And in case you missed any of this program, it will be available for download on iTunes. Search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Subscribe and get it sent to your iPod each and every week. Ezzy, I understand you're going to Snap Fitness afterwards today. Do you want to join for the soft opening?
Yes, there's a soft opening coming up, and I'm going to be joining. I need to really increase my cardio with Dave Manuk, and he's going to get me going.
Yeah,
I've gained a little bit of weight.
The two of you guys are a match made in heaven.
Drew, beach season's coming up, and let me tell you, nobody wants to see me in a bathing suit right now. So I'm going to be doing some push ups, some sit ups, some pull ups. Very excited.
Excellent. The new Snap Fitness opening, 1580 Taylor Avenue. Dave Manuk, that's a shout out to you there, boy. Anyways, let's do another giveaway for Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club.
Can we just give you away?
No, you can't give me away. Third caller, 780-1290. Third caller at 780-1290. You win tickets to Tuesday night's comedy show at Rumors featuring Daniel Kino from the Ukraine, which, of course, is not weak.
Ukraine's not weak.
Let's go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. Little Daft Punk.
Can't wait for that rave tonight.
Around the world.
Is that why you're wearing a soother in your mouth already? Welcome back to the program. This segment is brought to you by Carbone Coal-Fired Pizza, home of Canada's only coal-fired pizza oven. Taste the difference at Carbone Coal-Fired Pizza, 1580 Taylor Avenue, pizza baked, well done.
Go down to Snap Fitness and then go over to Carbone.
That's exactly what I was going
to
say. As you know, you're going to go for the Snap Fitness opening, and then you're going to ruin that entire workout, or as you do, stand around and talk. That's almost like a workout. And then you're going to go to Carbone right afterwards, and you've just wasted your entire afternoon.
Once again, Drew, you're incorrect. I'm going to go to Snap I'm going to go to Carbone before I go to Snap, and I'm going to get the pizza to go, and then I'll be eating the pizza as I'm walking around the track.
I knew you were going to say that. I could have bet anything that you were going to say that.
Well, it's a good, you can't argue with that logic whatsoever. Coming up in about, at the top of the hour, Ben Kuzma from the Vancouver Gazette is going to join us. Vancouver Province is going to join us. Getting myself confused this morning.
When you grew up, it was called the Vancouver Gazette.
That's right, exactly. Vancouver Province is going to join us, talk about the Canucks.
Drew, talk about the days when there was, what was the Tribune?
Ice cream used to be a nickel.
Winnipeg Tribune.
And they used to walk uphill to school both ways. Is that it?
Both ways. Yeah. With no shoes on.
I couldn't afford shoes. Shoes were very expensive back then. Paper bags. They're very wet in the wintertime. Yes.
What were those bikes called? Penny farthings? Those bikes that had the huge wheels? Remember those bikes? Were they called penny farthings? Well, look that up, but those old school bikes, you know what I'm talking about.
It was like a tricycle.
Those huge, like from the Chaplin era, those bikes that had the huge wheels that people used to ride. It was an elevated seat with huge wheels. I'm going to look that up on Google. It was like penny farthing or something like that.
I'd ask if you had anything better to do, but we know you don't.
Penny cycle, I don't know, something like that.
Did you just drop the Chaplin era?
Yes.
Did you enjoy The Artist?
I didn't see it.
Really? It's around the Chaplin
the
area.
The only Oscar movie I saw was Moneyball. The rest of the movies, I didn't know what was
going
on.
That's the only one I saw, too.
I have no desire in the Oscars.
Anyways, moving right along. Canadian teams, the Vancouver Canucks, they made a big splash at the trade deadline. Two moves, Sammy Paulson, of course. Let's start with Sammy Paulson to begin with. How does he fit into that Vancouver Canucks lineup?
He's a big guy. He's tough. He's hard to knock off his skates. He can play against other teams' best players. You know, as Scott Arneal said on Monday, not a great offensive player. But that's not what they're counting on him for. Some people have concerns about leaving the offense, limiting their offense on the third line now that they don't have Hodgson there. I like what they're doing. They have enough offense in the top two and from the wings. They can get by, I think. He's going to be a nice big body to play against some other teams' top centers coming down the stretch.
Yeah, Richie, and I was a little bit surprised when that move happened, but as far as the Cody Hodgson move goes to Buffalo and getting Cassie and Gragnani,
I liked it.
I agree. I've started to like it more and more with each passing day. It'll obviously only happen 5 days ago, but they want to get tougher. Cassian plays the game old school, run and gun, very physical, big guy, and Gragnani is going to give you depth on defense. And let's be honest, Cody Hodgson wasn't moving up that depth chart with Kessler and Henrik Sedin there. And then you throw in Sammy Paulson. you know, I hate to, you know, over agree with you, Richie, but the Canucks are absolutely stacked now. And why wouldn't you go get players that are proven guys that will get the job done in the playoffs, like Sammy Paulson? I mean, they remember what Paulson did in Anaheim in 2007. They remember that, and he's a guy that, let's be honest, he was completely, you know, living in obscurity there in Columbus. So a guy like him, what's better than, you know, going to a team that's a contender? So those were some good moves. I mean, the Vancouver in the past maybe has made some moves that didn't help them that much at the deadline back, you know, a few years back, but you know, I like those moves a lot.
They get bigger with Cassian, they get bigger with Paulson, they get young with Cassian, they exchanged Hodgson. Hodgson wasn't going to be a top two center there with Kessler and Sedin in front of him for years and years. They don't like him on the wing. It made sense to get Cassian. He's a big guy, he's strong, goes to the net, he has speed, he has size, he's fearless, he's a little bit crazy. You had Grigani, can add an offensive element. We had thought originally that they had Stajos. They don't have Stajos. Even so, it gives you a nice offensive element on the back end, gives you more depth on the back end. You get bigger and more defensive with Paulson. You've addressed all the needs. You're a well-oiled machine.
What role is Cassian going to be playing third line there?
Richie, you know what?
You know, ideally, they probably want him to move up with the Sedins eventually and be that right winger. But right now, he'll play third line, play a little. But they'll move him around.
Yeah.
Mason Raymond and Kessler haven't had the chemistry that people had hoped. So they'll try some different things. He's versatile.
And they know. I mean, even though, you know, back in 2010 when the Chicago Blackhawks won the Stanley Cup, even though the way I look at that move is I look at it like a Dave Bolin. Even though Dave Bolin is a center and he was playing a different role. It's going to be a position. It's going to be a similar role, and he's going to be a guy that's going to go out there and agitate people, and wear people down, and hit bodies. And that's what they need. I mean, the Vancouver Canucks have so much talent. You know that they're going to outscore almost their opponent on any given night. They just have too much there. And they added David Booth earlier in the season, and they've got enough there. That's what they need. The Canucks have to win the Stanley Cup this year. I mean, the window of opportunity is closing, though? But you've got 2 years. They definitely don't have 5 years.
They don't have 5 years. I agree with that, but I don't think they have any less than three.
No, well, I mean, you look. There's nobody on that team that's in a real key role.
I mean, you got the early 30s.
That's tremendously old.
Yeah, Kessler's in his prime years. I think that you have Hamhuis and Edler's only getting better, and BX is not old. I see them competing. You know, their window being 3 to 4 more years. That's why I don't like the idea of people saying, "Well, just sell the farm now." To try and load up. You have lots of time.
Yeah, you look. I mean,
Mike Gillis is arguably. Well, he's a top five GM in the league, in my opinion. So, I mean, you're dealing with him.
Is it possible he's underrated as a general manager?
I don't know. I think he's top five. I think people know that. People know he's a smart guy. We'll ask Ben about that. But he's up there with Kenny Holland and, you know, David Poile. And I think Stevie Eiserman's soon to move into those ranks, too. There's a bunch of other guys
Lamoriello.
We obviously haven't suggested.
I wouldn't say Lamoriello.
I'm really not right now, but before, for all time
he's
work.
Still there.
All-time work.
He certainly had a bounce-back year this year.
No, but I mean, he hasn't had a good last 3 or 4 years, but he's
what happens
there.
With Parise, too? As if they lose Parise, then where are they?
Well, but that's interesting. I mean, that's what Al Strachan mentioned about the New Jersey financial troubles, and we know about those financial troubles. Yeah. I don't see how they can keep Parise. I just don't see how they have the cash flow to do it.
He signed a one-year deal when he could have signed a longer year.
Yeah, but he's a UFA this year. He's not going to sign a one-year deal.
What I'm saying is he signed a one-year deal, and that set the table for him leaving. Well, I mean, that's not a good sign when you sign a one-year deal when you could have. I mean, ideally, you want to sign a guy like Parise to 5 or 6 years.
They don't have the money. They don't have the money. I would not be the least bit surprised to find out that the NHL has been significantly funding that team, much like they were doing in Dallas.
Might be the case, Drew.
I mean, we've heard about the financial troubles in New Jersey. Wouldn't surprise me at all.
They're not in a good financial position right now at all.
It's funny because the owner of New Jersey actually called Ezzy for money.
Well, that's a real problem.
Yeah.
It's a real problem.
Because I called Richie for money.
And then we called Drew and we realized Drew's running a Ponzi scheme.
No, and then we found out Drew has all of our money.
We're all in trouble is really what it boils down to. Let's go to break. When we come back, Ben Kuzma from the Vancouver province is going to join us. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. 2 hours down, 1 hour to go. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/Illegal Curve. And the website, of course, that bears our name is www.illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
Let's welcome back to the program from the Vancouver province, Ben Kuzma. Ben, good afternoon. How are things out on the left coast?
You might hear some pucks in the background. I'm at the morning skates. The Canucks are done. The Sabres are just coming off the ice. And quite a bit of buzz here. Obviously, the whole Cody Hodgson situation and the fact that the Sabres are in here for Hockey Night in Canada till tonight. So a bit of a buzz in the rink. There wouldn't normally be one, but after the trade deadline, there certainly is.
Absolutely. It's amazing what a week does. You know, last week at this time, it would have just been another Eastern Conference versus Western Conference game. Then these teams matched up on Monday afternoon and made the deal. And the Buffalo Sabres, believe it or not, are somehow right in the thick of the Eastern Conference playoff race.
Yeah, they are. I mean, everybody has an opinion about what occurred here. But, you know, at the end of it all, I think everybody got what they wanted. You know, Cody Hodgson was in a very awkward situation here. I mean, there was a situation where he's the third line center and he's playing behind an Art Ross Trophy winner and a Selke Trophy winner.
Right.
So, you know, he's going to play 10 or 12 minutes a night. He's on the second power play unit, but he does have 16 goals. What do you do with the guy? He's a natural center. You can't really play him on the wall. But having said that, there was kind of an uneasy relationship with the coach. If you go back to the 09 training camp here, Cody Hodgson had a back injury, I think he had 1 point through 6 or 7 preseason games. He had a lot of back pain, a lot of sciatica nerve. He basically couldn't push off, couldn't play very well. And the coach kind of framed it at the time publicly that Cody was using the injury as an excuse for a poor training camp. Now, I don't know about you, but if a coach had said that about me, as much as you may try to put it in some perspective, I'm sure that was always simmering on the back burner. And I'll tell you this much about Cody Hodgson. He's a great kid. He did everything asked of him in the organization. Never said boo to anybody. But I think what had occurred here in the last couple of weeks, and I know for a fact, there was a meeting about Cody Hodgson's ice time before the trade deadline. And the fact that the coach has already gone public to say, you know, he plays a certain role, he's not going to get more ice time, that was probably the catalyst to get something to occur here in terms of the trade. So the Canucks, knowing what the landmine's going to be like to get through the conference and hopefully back to the Stanley Cup final, they had to get something in return in terms of some size and potential and maybe some depth on the back end. So that had a lot to do with everything.
Ben, I want to ask you about the Kassassin, as your colleague Jim Jameson called him in the Vancouver province yesterday, Zach Cassian. He's played one game. How did he look in that first game, and how is Coach Alain Vigneault going to use him going forward?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, I was in Phoenix for the deadline, so I saw him play his first game there. And right off the bat, for a guy who just turned 21, he can skate. I mean, he's 6'3", he's 220, but he can skate. Having said that, he is 21. He just turned it. You can see that he's a project. He is, you know, he's big, but he's not cut, as they say. You know, he's still got some of that youthfulness about him. But I'll tell you what, though, I got to give the kid credit. He came in here the other night against St. Louis and had 4 shots in the first period. Like I said, he can skate. He can keep up in the play. He can throw a lot of hits. I think the problem is, at this level, can he keep it up? It's a consistency that the Canucks are going to need from him. And if you're expecting a 21-year-old kid to be a big difference, that's not the way I see this playing out. He's playing fourth-line wing right now. But to tell you the truth, in the playoffs, if he keeps improving, he might end up on the third line. And Max Lapierre, who's their natural fourth-line center, he might move up to the third line. They have a problem on the third line. It doesn't really have an identity now. You know, getting Paulson at the deadline is fine, but in terms of a shutdown line that could maybe make something happen offensively, what the Canucks do have now are a lot of options, and I wouldn't be surprised if Cassian's on the third line come the postseason.
It does provide them with options, Ben, but what do you say to the people, you know, I guess the critics who have some concerns that losing that offensive element on the third line is going to cost the Canucks in the long run?
Yeah, I think I'm in that camp. This team scored 8 goals in 7 games in the Stanley Cup final. I mean, they were hurting for offense then. Like I said, you take 16 goals out of your lineup, the second unit power play guy who was pretty effective. Where's that offense going to come from? And the way they're aligned right now, what concerns me is they've got their top line, and what they have configured right now are 3 checking lines. I think what they have to do, and we might see it here tonight against Buffalo, is get Chris Higgins back up with Ryan Kesler and David Booth, what we like to dub the Amex line because they're all Americans. But as much as Chris Higgins is an effective player, he's kind of irrelevant on the third line right now.
Yeah.
With Paulson in the middle and Hansen on the right side, I think you need to get Booth back up in the second line. Those three guys have a lot of chemistry together. The unfortunate thing is with Booth's knee injury this year, Kesler coming off hip surgery, Chris Higgins fighting two staph infections. They haven't been together long enough to be consistent over many weeks, but there's a lot of chemistry between those three guys, and I think they really need to get that line back together, maybe even tonight. You've got to have a second line of attack. It's fine to say you can play in all these low-scoring games. Somebody's got to score.
You know, you mentioned David Booth, a guy that I actually was a big fan of in Florida, and now obviously in Vancouver, he's obviously gone through a concussion and injuries this season. Does he bring, when he's healthy, Ben, does he bring that nice, obviously good stick handler, can skate well, but is his ability to drive and willingness to drive the net going to be an important element come playoff time?
Yeah, I think it's imperative. Corey Schneider, the backup goalie, had a great quote the other day, said, about David Booth, we really didn't have that in the playoffs last year. We didn't have a guy who can come off the wall and go hard to the net and finish. And by finish, it's either shooting, scoring on your initial shot. And a lot of David Booth's goals are on rebounds. He's diving, he's flopping, he's banging home rebounds. And if you really think about today's NHL, that's how a lot of goals are scored. So I think there's a real attractiveness about David there. He skates extremely well. But, the big thing here is, this isn't Florida. And talking to him this morning, the biggest adjustment for him is to understand how high the bar is raised in Vancouver. That mistakes that you could get away with in Florida aren't going to cut it here in Vancouver. And, he kind of played an east-west game when he got here, a lot between the walls. And he had to really tailor his game to understand that the Canucks do move the puck extremely well. They're heavy on the forecheck, and they play a real north-south game. And at his best, he's playing that, and he goes to the net hard. He's tailed off a little bit here. I think he might have got a little hurt in Detroit when they were there, and he's kind of nursing an injury that he doesn't want to talk about. But more often than not, he's been there for them, and that was a pretty good move at the start of the year.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. We're joined by Ben Kuzma of the Vancouver Province. Ben, the other player that the Canucks acquired on the trade deadline from Buffalo, that's Marc-Andre Gragnani, very much a power play specialist. Is that what the team is expecting of him, sort of go out there, just be an offensive power play sort of defenseman?
Well, yeah, I think he loves it because, the game here the other night with St. Louis, he was up in the play pinching, and then the Canucks, the guys in the back end have the green light to go. I mean, their pairings, the guy with more offensive upside has got the green light to get involved in the play. And I think what I saw here, he was on the second power play unit the other night against St. Louis. He gives him a nice option of a guy 24, has been around a bit, skates well, moves the puck well. And the Canucks have to realize that they better have another option back there. I mean, one of their big weapon back there is Sammy Sell. I mean, on one of their power play alignments. I mean, outside of Zdeno Chara, he may shoot the puck as hard as anybody in the league, and he's a real weapon. But, you always worry about a guy who's getting on in age and the injury problems and the fact that you're going to lose guys in the postseason. I think the interesting thing about Gragnani is he gives him that option as another guy who can move the puck back there. And then you have to look forward. You have to look at the fact that, they got some unrestricted guys in the back end who may or may not be here next year. And between Tanev and Gragnani, they've got a couple of guys with that potential. And as much as you have to answer all your needs today, you better think about the future. So I think that had a lot to do with it.
Ben, last year the Vancouver Canucks drew the Chicago Blackhawks in the first round, and that was arguably one of the best first-round series post-lockout. This year, are they looking down at the standings right now and seeing the Dallas Stars and, maybe the L.A. Kings as a first-round opponent and just salivating?
I don't think they're salivating about any matchup. I mean, as much as we talked about a few teams last year, there are six or seven teams in this conference that are going to cause anybody grief. I mean, from what I've just seen recently, whether it was Phoenix, Dallas, St. Louis here the other night, it's already playoff hockey. It's already, you're basically playing a trap. You're waiting for one turnover and all these low-scoring games. The Canucks can play those kind of games, and it's good that they can because you're going to see it in the postseason. But, their game isn't predicated on that. They'd rather get into a higher tempo game. I know they love playing, Detroit or San Jose just from the fact of the style of play, but you're not going to see that in the postseason. I mean, there's a reason St. Louis has only given up two goals a game. They they're still missing three key guys up front. But the reason Elliott's got the great numbers, you know, or Halak's got the great numbers is they don't give up much.
Right.
They don't give up rebounds. They forecheck you to death. They play a 200-foot game, and they play hard. I couldn't believe how hard the Blues played here the other night in back-to-backs and how hard they threw their weight around. So we're already getting a taste in March what it's going to be like in April and May and maybe into June. So to the Canucks' credit, they're tailored to play that kind of game. I'm a little concerned about their offense right now, but we'll see. I think coming out of the conference is going to be, you know, it's one landmine after another. And I think the reason they made those moves at the deadline is they think they might lose a body or two along the way, and you better have some depth.
You know, as much as it'll come down to, Ben, it'll come down to obviously the goaltending with Luongo likely and the Sedins and such. To me, I still have some concerns, and you can give me your opinion on this, some concerns that, you know, with Salo and how fragile he is, he goes down. Who comes up into that four-hole on defense, matching up against second lines like Couture's line, or in L.A. like Richard's line, or in Detroit like, you know, Zetterberg's line?
Well, that's where it really falls off in a hurry here. I mean, you've got, Hamus and Bjax as your shutdown pairing.
Mm-hmm.
And then Edler regularly pairs with Salo. And the nice thing about Edler is that he's getting his physical game back where he's really throwing some devastating hits out there, and he's got a pretty good shot. But after that, you know, Ballard's out right now with a concussion. Now, if Salo were to go down, Keith Allard's being paid like a top four guy, but he's not playing like a top four guy.
Right.
And that's where they run into a problem. And that's where you wonder, you know, guys like Aaron Rome, you know, they're third pairing guys.
That's right.
You know, when they've had injury problems here, they've paired Rome with Alberts on the third pairing, and they've struggled. And that's why they called Tanev up, because they think the kid, he's only 22, but he can play. He's challenged physically in some board battles, but he's extremely smart in moving the puck. The problem is, if Salo goes down, can Ballard handle that load? And that's where we're going to find out in the playoffs. And quite frankly, Bregnani and Tanev, don't be surprised if you see these guys playing in the postseason, because, as much as you have to defend, the biggest problem in the postseason is getting the puck out of your own zone, back there in a hurry and making that first good pass. And that's what Tanev is really good at, and what I've seen out of Gragnani so far, he's really good at. So you might give up some physical play in order to move the puck. So, again, it comes back to options, and that's really what the Canucks didn't have. And it got, by the time it got to the Bruins series, they were so beat up. They had so many guys injured who were trying to play. They weren't a match for the Bruins.
And what's the latest timetable, just quickly, on Keith Ballard? You mentioned Keith Ballard. Is there a timetable for his return right now, or
he's on long term, so he's basically not available for
at least a few weeks.
It's a month, so it's 10 games or 28 days, so he's probably late March. The idea is to get him back in, a couple of weeks before the playoffs.
Okay.
So his game is back to where it should be. I mean, he suffered a weird, nobody seems to know the exact play in Nashville. The way Keith Ballard plays, a lot of his body contact, you get a neck snapping back. Sometimes what people don't understand, that a lot of concussions today are caused by the whiplash motion.
Right.
And I think that's where Keith got his, originally it was neck pain, and they realized, okay, neck pain, suddenly he's having headaches, he rides the bike, he's fine for 2 days, then he feels better, then he feels worse. Then he tries to skate, he's okay for a day, then he has the headaches again the next day. So those are classic concussion syndrome symptoms. And, of course, there's a lot of speculation, a lot of theories out there that, my goodness, wasn't that convenient that Keith Ballard went on long-term injury reserve just before the deadline. So the Canucks went from $600,000 to $4.6 mil of cap space. But, there's a lot of theories out there. But, knowing Keith the way I do, I know that he got hurt, but probably hurt more than people realize. So he was playing very well, I must say, when he got hurt. So he's not just another guy. He's a guy they need back by the playoffs.
There you have it. Ben Kuzma, the Winnipeg Jets fans, in case they haven't been watching the Canucks, we'll see them firsthand Thursday night as the Jets visit Vancouver. Should be an entertaining battle, to say the least. Ben, thanks very much for joining us this afternoon on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Enjoy the game tonight.
Yeah, anytime, guys. Take care.
Take care, Ben. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Ben.
Let's go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. 20 minutes past 2 o'clock. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Big thank you to our guests today. Ben Kuzma from the Vancouver Province, you just heard from him. Aaron Ward from TSN, and Al Strachan, Hockey Hall of Fame journalist. If you missed any of those interviews, they will be available for download on iTunes and on the website, IllegalCurve.com. Search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on iTunes. Subscribe and get it sent to your iPod each and every week. Follow us on Twitter, at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, Facebook.com/IllegalCurve. Final opportunity, we're going to give away some more tickets to Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club for Tuesday's show. Callers number 1 and 4 to 780-1290. Give us a call. Talk to Michael Remus.
Just give us a call and talk to Michael Remus.
Yeah. You don't even have to get anything for doing so. But 780-1290, Michael Remus will take down your information.
I wonder what Remus says. I wish we had some recordings of what Remus, the conversations Remus has, because Remus has had many. He talks to, you know, my favorite, the fans, the disciples of Illegal Curve in that room. And to think of all the conversations he's had, we have no idea what he's talking about. But
we have no idea what you're talking about right now.
Yeah, exactly. Consistency there. I really have no idea what you're talking about.
Yeah, you know what, guys? The fact is I've been drinking too much Jets fan brew. But the thing is, I didn't. This is the thing, though. You know, Jim Ludlow came out, the president of True North came out on Thursday night's game with the CEO of Labatt or whatever, to introduce that fan brew. I didn't realize that there was river water inside. I thought you were supposed to drink water from the river, like, before you drank the Jets fan brew. I thought, like, you were supposed to go down to the river and drink it, but apparently there is water from the river inside of the beer. I didn't realize that. I thought you were supposed to. Anyways, I got it wrong, so I'm a little bit sick today, so.
I honestly don't know what you're talking about.
I have no clue what you're talking about.
It's okay. Let's move on and talk about the Jets.
Well, I'll tell you what. We've somehow gone over 2 hours and 20 minutes here, and we haven't mentioned the Winnipeg Jets really yet.
There's no game today.
Well, there's no games this weekend. There's no games next weekend. The Jets are getting to a point in their schedule where the other teams are catching up on the games in hand that they have.
Right.
They played Monday. They laid that egg Monday against the Oilers.
Yep.
Bounced back strong on Thursday against the Panthers.
Can we talk about that Thursday night game?
Let's talk about the Thursday night game. 7-0 Jets victory over the Panthers, of course.
Richie, that was a must-win. That was a 4-point game. It was an 8-point game. That was a game they had to win because, let's be honest, the Panthers had their number. They didn't have Chris Versteeg. And without Chris Versteeg, I like Chris Versteeg. And you know, people have said negative things about him in the past, myself included, about, you know, maybe his defensive game. But I generally like Chris Versteeg. And without Chris Versteeg in that lineup, that wasn't a very good team. And, you know, Thomas Fleischmann had the chance, the breakaway in the first period.
Two breakaways, and
Pavlik stopped both of them. You got the help from the post in the first period. But that was a very average team. And the Panthers, we had a chance to talk to Jovanovski, and he didn't have his best game in that game.
No.
And, you know, I love Jovanovski. But in that third period, wow, did it collapse on them with those goals.
They mailed it in Florida. Yeah. I actually thought, to be honest, out of the three games the Jets have played since we were last on air, not including the trade deadline show, of course.
So since last Saturday.
The Blues game.
The best game the Jets played was the Blues game.
By far. By far,
the Blues shouldn't have gotten two points, let alone one.
The Jets beat Florida 7-0, and I still think they played better against the Blues, and that's not to denigrate with the play that their play against Florida. But the Blues team was a better team, harder to play against, and they controlled the play, and it was, I think, their best game of the year. So you look at the Jets overall right now, and obviously they're rolling, and you got Evander Kane going now, and Dustin Byfuglien putting up crazy point totals.
Yep.
The team looks pretty good right now. The question is, well, that's not really the question. I mean, it's a game-by-game situation, which is the most cliche. The Jets need to be able to, make sure these home games are taken care of because they haven't been a great road team. And even this week, for example, not only do they play Buffalo, even if Buffalo loses tonight.
Seven more home games is all they have left.
Yep. Right, this Buffalo game is important, not only because it's a team competing with them, but when you go west, it's a tough schedule this week. Because you go west and you play Vancouver on
back
Thursday.
Back to back.
But Vancouver is the best team in the league, in my opinion. So you play Vancouver on Thursday and then you play back to back against Calgary. So what we know about home ice.
Competing for the Western playoffs.
Home ice gives you an advantage, Ezzy, and back to back. So say, for example, the Jets are playing back to back on home ice. Home ice gives you a certain percentage advantage. And generally speaking, playing on back to back nights takes away that advantage. So this is twofold now for the Jets. They're playing on back to back nights and they're playing on the road. So the Flames have an advantage before the game even starts.
Right.
It's a difficult week for the Jets in that respect. So you have to take the points against a team like Buffalo, who's coming up the coast, San Jose, Vancouver, and flying to Winnipeg. A lot of travel, a little bit tired, playing a team that's not as good. All due respect to the Jets, we know this. They're not as good as San Jose, and they're not as good as Vancouver. So maybe the Buffalo, I know they're competing with the Jets for a playoff spot, but maybe a little bit of a letdown in terms of what to expect.
Right. It's good. You're right. It, those we got the Sabres coming up, playing good hockey. Miller is going to go back to Vancouver for the first time since the Olympics, playing very good hockey. The Sabres are not out of it by any means. And you're right. Those two back-to-back games in Western Canada are going to be tough. And then you do have the five-day break. So you're going to play back-to-back games, but then you've got the five-day break, and then on the 14th you're going to have the Stars, and then you're going to have a nice little schedule there.
You have these three games and then a five-day break. Is that what it is?
They play, because they play three games
in like 10 days.
They haven't played a lot.
It's very possible the Jets are going to be looking up at a bunch of teams once this is done.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that's the question. I mean, and that's why the Buffalo...
So you got to win your games.
The Jets have had a lot of success against Buffalo this year.
Yep.
They have.
They've had a lot
different
of...
Different team, though.
Yeah, I know it's a different team. I know it's a different team right now. But, you know, you look at everything in the, you know, Toronto's, you know, you assume Toronto will get a boost based on the move.
Drew, Toronto, I know Randy Carlyle's coming in, and I think he's going to have an impact, but Toronto has 6 out of their next 9 are on the road.
Yeah.
Talk about hard schedules.
Not an easy schedule.
The Toronto Maple Leafs have one of the worst schedules coming up.
I mean, when talking about the 8th spot, too, as you know, these teams all have significant flaws.
Yep.
If anything, I think Buffalo's on paper has less flaws than anybody else.
If you look at Tampa, I mean, plays four games between they play tonight at Carolina, home to Ottawa, a tough game, at Washington. You know, the way Washington's Jekyll and Hyde.
It's crazy the way.
And then home to Carolina again.
It's crazy, Drew. You watch Tampa Bay the other night, and you think they're icing 4 to 5, 6 AHL guys out there.
Yeah.
They only have one line. So I just want, like, I like a lot of what I've seen from the Jets this year. But we also need to keep in perspective who they're competing with here.
I thought Tim Campbell of the Winnipeg Free Press did a good job. And Gary Lawless has talked about this in his columns this week as well.
You're leaving out Ed Tate here.
Ed Tate's obviously a great hockey writer as well. But, you know, Tim Campbell and Gary Lawless have written about this week. The Jets have gone through 4 stages in the season. There was the beginning stage on the road, and they struggled. And then they came home for December, and they had the crazy 10-win December. And then they went back on the road in January.
They need to win on the road.
And then they came back in February and had the crazy home stretch.
Or it's just they play well on the road, and they're
But Richie, the schedule has been go on the road for a long stretch, come back to home, and they go. So there's been they need to get some back-to-back wins on the road, and they're going to get a nice little break.
It's so much harder to win on the road, as in it's not the fans are a huge factor. There's no question about that, and I discounted that as being as big a factor as it's been. And you were right about that, Ezzy. Another thing, though, you get last chance.
The one matchups. Time I was
control the matchups. The face-offs. I did an article on this thing last year for Hockey Prospectus when I was writing for them, and I think it's something about, I looked at the top 60 face-off guys for the past 4 or 5 years. Their percentages at home are something like 4% advantage over on the road. So you get that advantage every time because you put your stick down last, right?
Yeah.
So that's an advantage. So your face-offs are an advantage. Your matchups are an advantage.
Yep.
There's many things. It's obviously
but
the home
confines.
But you
about the fact that the Jets have the number one home power play in the
that's
league?
It's thing.
Ridiculous.
I mean,
and then they go on the road and then it stinks.
And the comfort. So there's a huge advantage in playing home. And here, especially with the fans, it's been great. But if you're going to make the playoffs, there's no question about this, guys. We can say this. It's simple. There's nothing profound about this. If you're going to make the playoffs, you have to win games on the road.
The Jets know it. All those players in the dressing room know it.
They have 9 road games left.
Yep.
And how many home games? 7.
And 7. Yeah. 6 of those 9 are in back-to-back situations.
Yep.
So they go...
Three sets.
Yeah, three sets of back-to-backs.
Yeah.
Thursday and Friday at Vancouver, at Calgary.
Yep.
Both teams are better than the Jets.
Now, Calgary is not better than the Jets.
You don't think Calgary's better than the Jets?
No, but they're playing on the road after playing half of back-to-back.
Whether or not, you know who you favor there, I mean, Calgary's a decent hockey
team. The Jets should be able to outskate Calgary. Calgary's not a fast team.
Yep.
Then they play Friday and Saturday, the 23rd and 24th, at Washington and at Nashville. Well, we know Nashville's a better team than they are.
That's for sure.
And Washington is a crapshoot.
Yeah, Washington,
they play the Caps twice more.
Yeah.
They've got the Lightning once more.
Well, what's the other back-to-back?
And then at the end of the month, they have at Carolina and at Tampa Bay, which are really two games that they should win both of those games. Not a difficult road travel there.
It's not like these home crowds are loud.
Richie, I know that...
And then the last week of the season is at Florida, at the Islanders, and home to Tampa.
Right.
No, we've talked on the schedule. It's not hard.
Yeah, it's not a difficult schedule.
They're playing in a poor division, and they've taken advantage of it.
And the thing is, Drew, you know, you talk a lot about how many games you have to win, and whether you say it's 11 out of 16 or 12 out of 16 or whatever, it doesn't matter. You've got to win every game, and you've especially got to win, like you said, and you've nailed it. Yep. Those road back-to-back games.
Yeah.
Hey, right now the Jets are in 8th.
Yeah.
So right now, nothing else matters. It's the 6 weeks to come. And those 6 weeks are really going to be the hardest games are going to be those road
back-to-back. At the end of the day, everybody's going to play 82 games. So all the Jets should really worry about is taking care of their own business.
They're not going to look back on those lost points to Edmonton. They're going to look back now. No, now, because now you're on an even playing field. Now you're good. You might have some games in hand on the Jets, but it's those road games back-to-back that
are
going
to be the killers. You're not winning games handily and you're not a great team. Those games happen to Edmonton. Those games happen to the Islanders because, in reality, you're not that much better than them, if at all. I mean, the Jets came into the game against Edmonton, Ezzy, the same goal differential. If you put Edmonton in the Jets division, you put the Jets in Edmonton's division, what do you see?
Probably similar results.
Right.
Let's leave it there. Congratulations to Ryan, Braden, Jim, and Rob. They're the winners of the Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club tickets. The giveaways this week. Many more giveaways to come in the weeks ahead. 30 minutes to go. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290.
Miss the wrestling theme music.
I don't.
Where's the wrestling theme music? Where's Steve Austin?
No.
We've played Stone Cold. We need to play Y2J.
No.
We need to get a little earthquake in there.
I'm pretty sure we finished
Texas Tornado, Rick the Model Martel. Oh,
yeah. I'm pretty sure once we played Pomp and Circumstance 8 times last week, we finished off the wrestling music.
And what a bill that was.
Yeah, exactly. What a bill that was.
Weren't allowed to play that.
Yeah. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Big shout out to Raccoon Carney for terrorizing Ezzy and I at the end of the show last week. Yeah, that was hilarious, except for when my heart palpitations caught on. That was a little bit of problematic. Anyways, welcome back to the program. Let's go through this quote from Troy Brower last night after the Washington Capitals were embarrassed on home ice. I'd say yet again, but you know it has been yet again this year. Troy Brower to Chuck Gormley of Comcast Sportsnet, Washington.com. I don't think we worked very hard in the third period. I thought we packed it in, Troy Brower said. We looked like a real timid, beaten-down hockey team. We have to address that and make sure there is no quit in us, ever. It's one thing to be saying that after game 10 in the season. Yep. After game 65 in the season, maybe that's just your team.
Well, that's it, Drew. And this loss, you know, after last year's complete no-show against Tampa in the second round, guys, I mean, this is the same thing. It's the same problem. And fundamentally speaking, you bring in a guy like Brower, or you bring in a guy like Joel Ward.
Yep.
As much as those guys help to insulate a roster, they don't fundamentally change Ovechkin and Semin and Green. The best players need to be your warrior. They need to be able to go. Like, you need to have guys who are willing to do whatever it takes. A Marty St. Louis and you know, you have Brad Richards or Ezzy. Ryan Kessler or whoever, maybe you need to be the core guys. You can bring in these character guys around. You know, the Marty Lapointe's back in the day, Darren McCarty's, Chris Schaefer's, all were great. Without Stevie Eiserman, and Brendan Shanahan, Fedorov, and those guys, you weren't going anywhere.
Right.
And so unless your leaders are the guy, unless your best, but those guys are leading, your top guns are leading and setting an example, it's very hard to change the culture of the room.
Richie,
how many times can Brooks like? Sorry, Ezzy. How many times can Brooks like after a game say it's tough? We know he's a warrior.
Yep.
How many times can these guys come in here, Brower? You know, say certain things. At some point, you are what you are. They've changed coaches. They've changed systems. They've changed personnel around that core. And for whatever reason, that core doesn't seem to be able to get it done. And seems, you know, Alexander Ovechkin seems like a different player.
Let me ask you this about Alexander Ovechkin. What's his career path? What is his destiny in the NHL at this point?
I say that's a million-dollar question, but as the answer, I got 40. What's left in his deal? It's a $45, $50 million question.
It's funny. His destiny, I mean, Alexander Ovechkin, you know, arguably in the last, let's say, a couple of decades, is one of the most talented guys to come along. When I think about the most talented guys to come along, and I realize there's a new school coming up in the NHL. You've got, you know, the Steven Stamkoses and the John Tavareses and the Ryan Nugent Hopkins. But Alexander Ovechkin's not old by any stretch. He's 25 years old, 26 years old, whatever it is. It's one of the two. And he's still young. And he came into the league with Sidney Crosby, and that was it. It was just, even last year, it was with the Winter Classic. It was Crosby versus Ovechkin.
Since that day.
Everything seems to have changed. I mean, Ovechkin, again, hasn't got it done in the playoffs. And we've talked about this earlier in the season. Ovechkin's taken a step back. He's regressed. Yeah. And
do you think he misses Crosby as his foil at all?
No, because when Crosby was even healthy, Drew, his downfall even started before that Winter Classic. I mean, for both of them, with Crosby going out, sure, but even so, Crosby came back for a period of time this year. Ovechkin,
I mean, he doesn't set an example defensively. He has no interest in the rest of the game. He seems to have worn down a bit, maybe. I mean, maybe that's the explanation. Maybe he's not playing as rugged as he once did, and that's taking a toll. And Don, you know, Scott said that on Monday, playing tough minutes. Don Cherry said that on Coach's Corner a while back. And people like to discredit a lot of things that Don Cherry says, but he says a lot of accurate things. That's true.
Yep.
I mean, Ovechkin did play a rough and tough style, and that does wear on your body.
Yeah, and the, Richie, what, you know, Drew asked about his destiny, and you know, Drew, I have to think that inside of him, there is a burning desire to win a Stanley Cup, win the championships in the best league, and there's no reason to believe that with
how much though, Ezzy? How much? I'm not questioning his willingness to want to win, but how much does he want to win?
Okay, right, and maybe it's not as much as you would like, but I have to believe that he actually does want to win a Stanley Cup, because that's what you dream about, and when you're a player in the NHL,
that's what you and I dream about.
You've got the contract, so he's not playing for anything else aside from that, and that might be the problem.
Well, maybe he's playing not to be injured, to get his money and to live his life and be, you know, and be an average NHLer and everything else.
Yeah,
I don't see him dominant the Olympics either.
I don't see him like, you know, Russia went out meekly in the quarterfinals.
Right.
I don't see, like, Steve Yzerman, you knew that he, you know, it was blood and heart and soul was to win that Stanley Cup, that first one that he won with Detroit.
Or the Olympics, too, and he played on one knee in 2002.
Exactly. And he retired right after that. I mean, he didn't play another meaningful NHL game after that Olympics.
And Drew, if that...
That season he was out, he came back the years, but he was at that point, too.
And if that burning desire isn't as good as it should be in order to take a team to the Stanley Cup, hey, maybe if the Capitals miss the playoffs, the first thing Ovechkin should be doing, and I'm not in any place to tell Alexander Ovechkin what he should or shouldn't be doing, but maybe, you know, he should be looking in the mirror and saying, like, you know, am I giving everything? Am I really improving his hockey part? Because we know, Drew, that Sidney Crosby, when Sidney Crosby was struggling with faceoffs, we know that Sidney Crosby dedicated himself to getting in better physical shape, and he dedicated himself to get better at faceoffs. Hey, you might have all the talent in the world, but you know, talent alone does not get you a Stanley Cup. Look at the Vancouver Canucks; they're a more talented team than the Boston Bruins.
Right. Agreed.
Boston Bruins wanted it more, and they did everything they needed to win the Stanley Cup. Again, if the Vancouver Canucks don't win the Stanley Cup, it's not because they don't have talent. Because, hey, guys, together, is there anybody more talented together than the Sedins? I mean, you have to want it. Yeah. You have to want it. And in hockey, there are intangibles.
There are,
you know, blocking pucks. There are, you know, laying the hit, sacrificing yourself. There are things that you have to do that are above and beyond just, you know, getting a fancy goal to win a hockey game.
Quickly back on Detroit. Detroit won the cup in 2002 after the Olympics. I think he played, but he played on one leg, I think, in the rest of the season, because he retired after 2004, I think, after the lockout.
Sure, but whatever it was, you could see that. I mean, he, you know, he was willing to do. Or he didn't care about his health.
Yeah.
I mean, his health is secondary to winning that cup and winning the gold medal.
We don't know if that's what it is with Ovechkin. Just a willingness to, if you stand around like he does when you don't have the puck, at some point that rubs off on the other players on the team. And I'll tell you what, when you're scoring 60 goals a year, people have time for it.
Yep.
Yeah. Scoring 30 goals a year, people don't have time
for
it. Because 30 goal scorers you can find around the league. There aren't a ton of them, but you can find them. You can't find one 60 goal scorer, except for a guy like Ovechkin or Stamkos, if at all. So that's these excuses. People, it's always what, you know, that's always how it is in sports, guys. People will put up with your shtick.
As long as you're performing.
When you're not.
Yep. Which I understand.
I understand it too.
The Capitals will never accomplish anything when Alexander Ovechkin isn't carrying the team on his back.
They
will never accomplish anything.
Exactly.
He's got to carry the team on his back.
If he walks into the locker room now and starts saying stuff at some point, it doesn't have, I guarantee you, for the players in that room, it does not have the same meaning as it did 3-4 years ago.
I'd be surprised if he, I don't think he's vocal at all.
It doesn't seem like it. For 24/7, it doesn't seem like he is at all. But if he is, they don't take it with the same weight they took it with 3-4 years ago, because he's not performing at that same level anymore. And not only the players notice that, so he has less pull in the room, but also seems to have less control on the ice.
And Richie, I gotta say something else about Alexander Ovechkin. You know, I watch, and I'm a fan of Ovechkin's.
Of course,
talented, and I think he doesn't get enough credit too for being a physical player. He's a big guy. And he can lay some hits. I want to see good things for Alexander Ovechkin.
He doesn't use his teammates good.
But I don't think that he's taken the steps to improve his game as he's gotten older. Let's be honest. He came in as a 19-year-old, and everything was easy for him.
He hasn't adapted. We've spoken about that on the show. He has the same moves. He has the same style.
Ken Hitchcock really set up well, had the book on him.
And used in the Olympics really well, put a big body like Rick Nash on him, a big body. Yeah. Takeaway, what he likes to do is the goal he scored against the Islanders the other night. Come off
in
the right
Olympics,
wing,
it was Shea Weber.
Snap a shot, yeah, that's right. And snap a shot, and forward too, though.
Yep.
And snap a shot, and they take away that shot, and what's he doing? Because he doesn't use his, and that's one thing we said on the show years ago, he doesn't use his teammates well enough. And when you take away what he can do well scoring, and he's not using his teammates, his game erodes.
He's a one-man show, and he can't, and when you're playing against great competition, you can't be a one-man show. Let's leave it there. Let's go to break. When we come back, one final segment. Mr. Perfect's theme song.
Amazing, Timmy. I love it.
Well, Drew, you call yourself Mr. Perfect.
He was the Intercontinental Champion.
He was.
Mr. Perfect, one of the best. Kurt Hennig.
Oliver Sholem.
Yeah, Oliver Sholem is right.
Oliver Sholem. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the program. One final segment on this Saturday afternoon. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/Illegal Curve.
I'm Michael Remus, and this is your Illegal Curve news update. Ron Wilson was fired by the Maple Leafs yesterday. This is no surprise to Richard Pollock, who wondered on the December 31st show why he was given the extension in the first place.
Why would you not wait until maybe he makes the playoffs and he does something of substance and he can start afresh with maybe a Carlisle and then bring in all these free agents and just start anew?
In other correct predictions, Ezra Ginsberg was right. On the February 18th show, he correctly predicted that there would be less trades at this year's deadline.
I think we're going to see less trades than last year.
No, I disagree.
I hope you're wrong, Ezra.
I disagree.
Richard Pollock and Drew Mandel were caught in a heated argument while off air before recording a podcast this week.
Drew, we got to stop at 7 for milk.
I'm not stopping at 7
for 2
milk.
Minutes. I'm almost 2 minutes.
I'll buy you a Slurpee.
I don't want a Slurpee.
I'll buy you a Slurpee.
I don't want a Slurpee.
I want to go home. I'm not chauffeuring.
I'm not driving Miss Daisy all the time here.
Drew, come on. I'll buy you a Slurpee.
I don't want a Slurpee.
I'll buy you a chocolate bar.
Maybe a chocolate bar.
Drew Mandel finally caved in and made a special trip to 7-Eleven for Richard in exchange for a chocolate bar. For Illegal Curve News, I'm Michael Remus.
We did stop at 7-Eleven, and I got... You didn't buy me a chocolate bar, but you bought me a
Cadbury egg,
which...
Okay, hold on. Let's get Remus in right here. Let's get Remus in here right now. That was the funniest update
That was
ever.
Good, Remus. We didn't know, by the way. That was before a podcast. We didn't know that was actually on tape.
I was testing you guys. What I didn't put in is Drew saying, don't play that on air.
Anyways, if you had offered me a Cadbury cream egg to start, then I would have been gladly accepting
it. It was like 2 for $1, so I got one for myself.
There you go. It's a fair deal. Why don't we finish this? Let's go to Rapid Fire.
Rapid Fire.
Let's start with the Saskatoon. Apparently, group that's interested in bringing an NHL team to Saskatoon. Any chance at all?
Not only do they have hockey fans, but they have money. Saskatchewan, actually...
It's a booming economy.
No, actually, it's a booming economy.
Yeah.
Drew, you know, maybe 10 years down the road, I was just in Saskatoon, a ton of sports bars, huge sports fans, a lot of hockey fans. Maybe 10 years down the road, growing population. They already have a lot of money. Maybe, but not right now. No, it's not a big city to have a hockey team in, but down the road, it's something to consider for sure.
And you know what? Saskatoon has hosted, NHL exhibition games before.
They're going to next year, the Jets.
Right. Yeah. And that's awesome. I didn't know that. And Saskatchewan, you know, it's our neighbor to the left and we love Saskatchewan, the Rough Rider, Bomber rivalry, but you know, it's good news and it's definitely not going to happen next year,
but
it's something, I mean, you know, if there's an ownership group there. And, you know, there's plans to, you know, either expand or renovate.
No, they don't need to expand it. It's already 15,000 plus.
All right. So if they've got an arena there,
you know
they've got passionate hockey fans. So, you know, this is something that, you know, it's good news if there's the ownership group in place willing to bring a team to that arena. You know, you never know if it's going to happen. And the thing is, it's not going to happen next year, but it's positive news because we know that, there's never a shortage of fans that want to support NHL hockey in Canada.
It sounds like they're going to put some renovations and put some money into the, I think it's called the First Trade Center, if I'm not mistaken.
First Trade, I think you're right.
I think First Trade Center, it's
Saskatoon Blades.
It's not the best location, though, guys. I'll have you guys know. It's not like in the heart of downtown.
Okay.
So in terms of like a Winnipeg and creating a vibrancy downtown, it's not going to have that same effect.
But first and foremost, they have to have the arena up to NHL standard. And you know what? If you have the arena up to NHL standard, you never know.
And by the way, that Conference Board of Canada study, even though they are a respected organization,
the broad study
has nothing to do with it. Saskatoon could definitely support NHL hockey.
I don't know about definite. Although every prediction you've made lately has been true, so
which means I'm stockpiling cans for the apocalypse. Let me tell you. Saskatoon's population, a little over 220,000. Then there's the surrounding areas. I mean, it's easy for the Rough Riders.
Don't forget about Esterhazy.
Well, no, but I mean, Regina, Saskatchewan, you're talking about driving up for a amount of games now. That's 40, not 9.
That's right. For the Rough Riders, it's easy because there's only 9. You only have to make a commitment 9 times a year as opposed to 40 times a year.
The key to me is the booming economy.
Yeah.
Well, the potash.
The potash.
Yeah.
And if you get a booming economy, remember what happened with Alberta? Calgary. But if people start moving to Saskatchewan, who knows? Yeah. Then maybe.
At some point in time, the boom ends, and then that's the question. You know,
Imagine driving to Saskatoon to see an NHL game. It'd be unbelievable.
You know what? Driving anywhere with you would be unbelievable.
Yeah. Frightening. Right. Very frightening.
Or Miss Daisy over here.
Well, yeah, Miss Daisy.
No, for the record, you're Miss Daisy because I was the one driving you to the 7-Eleven.
Right. And you're...
I would be Denzel Washington's character. Or was it Samuel L. Jackson?
Is he in that movie?
Snakes on a plane?
Snakes on a plane. Driving Miss Daisy.
Snakes on a plane.
Who is the character who drove Miss Daisy?
I didn't see Driving Miss Daisy. It's a reference I've heard in TV and movies before.
I'm going to quickly Google that.
Is this Sly Stallone?
No, it's not. Hold on,
Tim,
let's throw mom off a train.
That was Morgan Freeman.
Morgan Freeman.
Oh. Thank you, Tim.
I thought Drew Mandel was the host of the show, not Leonard Maltin.
James Van Riemsdyk is out 4 to 6 weeks with a broken foot.
That's not good news.
Blocking a shot. We talked about it before. The sticks and the blocking the shots. I mean, blocking shots have a value, but maybe if you take away the a little bit slower shots, maybe there wouldn't be as many broken feet and you wouldn't have good players like James Van Riemsdyk on the shelf. You know, he's actually impressed me when I saw him here. I think he's getting a little bit better. They'll have him back for the playoffs, for which last year he was terrific in the playoffs. So as long as they have him for the playoffs, I think that's all they care about. I don't know. If they can get some goaltending, that team can move the puck.
Regardless of the injury, I really don't think Paul Holmgren was seriously considering moving him. He got Kubina, and he's going to be a huge part of that playoff push.
It never made any sense for him to be...
He's an emerging player. He's a big future of the team.
They wanted to switch him for his huge upside
not Luke Shen.
Big time. Exactly.
That's not Luke Shen.
And who's going to do that? If you have a young defenseman who's... You know, if you have Zach Bogosian... A guy like that.
Yeah.
And they offer James Van Riemsdyk. A little bit of their questions.
I don't think Chevy's interested in trading him.
You have some questions about whether both guys can be number one guys.
Yeah.
But why would you trade one for the other?
And Luke Shen is not... Nobody thinks he's going to be a top two guy.
No.
I mean, that's...
No.
You know,
no.
It's,
that good, was, solid, good solid
that was
defensive
illogical
defenseman.
From the beginning.
Good physical, solid defensive defenseman.
Yes.
But, you know.
He's a four.
Yeah.
He's a four.
Yeah. Let's not get carried away. Let's wrap up the show with Cheers and Jeers.
Cheers. Congratulations.
He's brilliant.
He's a good guy. And Jeers.
No, not good enough.
He's a bad boy.
I never seen something like this.
Surprisingly not good.
Ezra Ginsberg.
This is going to be a little bit of a narcissistic cheer, but I'm going to cheer myself for correctly predicting that there would be less trades in the trade deadline.
Why do I even bother with your cheers anymore?
I said that twice, and you guys, not only did you disagree, but you made fun of me, you laughed, you pointed, you judged. And
Isn't Vidui on Yom Kippur, Ezra?
There was 16 trades compared to last year. There's 24. So not only was I right, I was quite right. So I'm going to cheer myself.
Did you like that? Dave Minuk liked that. If Dave Minuk's still listening, he would have liked that reference I just dropped.
Sure.
You don't even...
I wasn't even listening to the show.
you're on the show. That's a real problem.
Seemingly.
Yeah.
No, Drew, I'm going to cheer the Nashville Predators ownership today.
Okay, so you're stealing what I was going to cheer, but that's
really?
Okay. I have a backup.
Okay, good.
Yeah, I'll let you go with this story.
Because...
A backup cheer.
Oh, no, maybe you're talking about story. I'm just talking about... This, you have a story?
Oh, I'm talking about the story our friend Zach. Did you not get the story from our friend Zach?
Clearly, I am not on the email list anymore.
Oh, it's
anyhow. I'm cheering ownership because they allow David Poile and Paul Fenn, and they allow them to be aggressive and trade draft picks. You know, when you're a team that's not a top cap team, you know, you always want to sustain competitiveness. And you want to sustain competitiveness at any level, at the top cap or a middle cap team. But the middle cap teams once in a while need to take a risk. And if by giving David Poile and Paul Fenton extensions and allowing them to trade draft picks, you take the pressure, I talked about it on Monday, but you take the pressure off them and allow them to make a move and not jeopardize their job security. And I think that was a great job by management. That's a good, that's a sign of management, ownership, all being on, and coaching, all being on the same page. And that's why a team like Nashville is a well-oiled machine.
Year after year in the playoffs. Totally year agree. After year, the Predators make the playoffs.
Before I get to my cheer, what happened was our friend Zach had sent an email to the Predators front office.
Okay.
Asking a question about their fan loyalty program.
Okay.
Not only did he get a response from the team, but the president of the Predators called him and answered his questions on the phone about it.
Really?
Yeah.
Zach Katz?
Zach Katz.
Nice.
Yeah. So that was, you know, that you don't see that every day where the president of a team will pick up the phone to call somebody who's not even in Nashville, you know.
Is it true that he called Tim Thomas and he didn't answer?
I'm not 100% sure. I think that might be true.
They want to talk to the president.
I know. It's very clever. I'm going to wrap up Cheers and Jeers by sending our best to Canadian legend Jean Beliveau.
Yes.
Earlier in the week, he suffered a stroke, but by all accounts, he's making some good progress. He's laughing. He's speaking. He's regaining some strength while he's undergoing some tests in a Montreal hospital. He is hockey royalty.
Yeah. It's not a meaningful Habs game without him in the stands.
Right. That's and right. He's always usually there, so I'm sure that he'll be in the thoughts and minds of the Habs fans today when they play the Leafs.
There's a quote here from a 1956 article from Frank Selke, who says that Jean Beliveau is the classiest hockey player. Yeah. He probably still is the classiest hockey player around.
Some things never change.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, so our best to Jean Beliveau and hopefully a speedy recovery to the 80-year-old hockey legend. That's it for this Saturday in the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. A big thank you to Aaron Ward of TSN. A big thank you to Al Strachan, Hockey Hall of Fame journalist. And a big thank you to Ben Kuzma from the Vancouver province.
And thanks to Timmy.
Yeah, of course.
Come on.
I haven't got there yet.
Timmy played the Mr. Perfect music.
I haven't got there yet.
Upstream Drew.
Yeah.
Upstream.
Shout out to our sponsors, Carbone Coal Fired Pizza, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, The Cheer Bar and Grill, and David Carr of Monopoly Realty. If you if you missed any of this program, it will be available for download on iTunes. Search for The Illegal Curve Hockey Show, subscribe, and get it sent to your iPod each and every week. Follow us on Twitter, @IllegalCurve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And the website, of course, that has all of your Winnipeg Jets news updated daily is www.IllegalCurve.com. For producer Tim, for Michael Remus, for Richard Pollock, for Ezra Ginsberg, my name is Drew Mindell. Thank you for joining us. And remember, if it's Saturday, it's The Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Join us again for serious hockey talk. Saturdays from noon to 3. The Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Only on TSN 1290. Your official home of the Winnipeg Jets.